Voilà, oui. So, before I go any further, just since we do have a full service, I do want to be mindful. And if there's a day where you get to be critical and where you get to keep me accountable, today would be the day. Just try to be mindful and so I don't go over the given time. So we do have a limited time, so. Today is the first event, and so we're slightly taking a shift from the journey that we've been on going through the Sermon on the Mount, and we're looking at the genealogy of Jesus. And so I'm not an advocate of anything here, but I found a website, and it is called ancestry.ca. Probably some of you guys might know it. You might have seen it on the commercials, on the ads, and so I'm not trying to promote anything. They have a sale going on here. Just getting you kind of started here, okay? Just kind of getting you started on this whole thing about genealogy of Jesus, you know? And I encourage you guys to read this whole list, Matthew chapter 1, 1 to 17, on your own. You know, you've got a long list of names, so we're going to go over that. And thank you to Brother Ted and Ellie for reading about today's reading. We light up the candle, so thank you for that. And so I just encourage you guys to do the reading on your own because of the limited time that we have here. Now, we all have our own kind of desires. I guess we all have this something in common where we like to trace our own bloodline. We like to find out who we are, our own identity, who do we belong to, who are we related to, who are our grandparents or our great, great, great grandparents. And so this is a similar thing that's going on here. And one of the things that the Korean people can also relate to is, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Korean people here, is that, for example, if John is the uncle of James, and James happens to be my cousin, then John would also be my uncle. And so, you know, this whole thing about, it's a whole web thing going on with the relationships. And so it's just easier when you know who you are, who you're related to, it's easier for relationships and who you associate with others around you. And just speaking of genealogy, just a little brief history here. Genealogy means Genesis in Greek, and we read that in English. Genesis also means beginning, origin, or birth. And so this is where we have the book of Genesis, the first book in the Bible from. And this Matthew does a really interesting thing here, right? He does this intentionally because he wants his audience, and he's mainly writing to his Jewish audience here, and not only for the Jewish audience, but for also for the Gentiles to be informed, in that he is listing four particular women here, as we have been reading, as Brother Ted read earlier. And so we know that Jews actually kept extensive genealogies, and they did it on purpose to establish a person's heritage, where did they come from, and the inheritance, the legitimacy, and the rights. And so it's a very significant thing for them to do it. And so when Matthew is listing a whole list of the names of the people here in chapter 1 here, he's not randomly doing that to confuse us, although it can sometimes be confusing, and we do like to skip sometimes, you know, who wants to read a long list of names, right? It's hard to memorize. But he does this in a way that he wants to remind us that Jesus came from the line of David and Abraham, and, you know, God's mission was never to exclude the outsiders, right? And so we have the title here, the outsiders, as we like to call them, the marginalized, the ones who usually get pushed aside, the outcast, the afterthoughts. And God's mission was always in history to bring the people into his family. And he did that. One of the things he did is he used the people, the prophets, and the leaders. But we read over and over again, the Old Testament is people kept failing and failing, right? And so it led to the point where Jesus was as being promised as the anticipated Messiah who was going to come, the Emmanuel, one day will come and bring the kingdom of God among them. That was his purpose, God. And so through God and through Jesus, we have the blessings that have been offered to us, because also God said to Abraham in Genesis 12, verses 1 to 3 also, that Abraham will be one day become a blessing to all the nations. And so I wanted to draw your attention to the four women here: Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba. Now, I'm not going to go into detail on each person because it's a long list. And so I encourage you guys to read. We don't know a whole lot about Tamar, but we read in Genesis 38, chapter 38, where he's the daughter-in-law of Judah, right? The Judah and the son of Jacob and the grandson of Abraham and so on and on. And so all you need to read is that Judah and his daughter-in-law Tamar, his son Er, one of his sons, married a Gentile woman named Tamar. And so eventually Er died, and then his brother Onan had to kind of, as a brotherly duty in their own culture in those days, they had to proceed and make sure that they carry on the line, the offspring. And so he married Tamar as well, but then he eventually also died. And so leaving Tamar childless and husbandless in those days. And so instead of waiting for God's provision to provide her with a life partner, she went ahead and, long story short, she disguised herself as a shrine prostitute. And so Judah, her father-in-law, comes along and he sees her and assumes that she's a prostitute and, you know, sleeps with her. And then she gets pregnant and she reveals all these things. And then Judah, her father-in-law, doesn't really know about what's going on here. He doesn't know it's her. It's been her the whole time. And all he says to the crowd, a big crowd of people, said, bring her out and burn her to death. But then later he finds out that Tamar is, in fact, the one she got pregnant is his daughter-in-law. And so then he says, she is more righteous than I. And so it's just a messy story going on here. And we move on to Rahab as well. And all these people actually are associated with all these things, right? We see Rahab is a Canaanite, a prostitute. She's a liar, a deceiver. And so we read in the story of Joshua when he sent the spies into Jericho, you know, Rahab was doing her best to hide the spies. And, you know, in those days, if you got caught, it would have been really hard because the Canaanites, you know, and Israelites, they weren't really getting along and they were fighting against each other. And so, you know, it's just a whole story here. Rahab, in short, became a family of God, and she became saved as well when Jericho was invaded by the Israelites. And Ruth, on the other hand, is also a Moabite, who is also a foreigner. And she's not also permitted to marry into Israel. But somehow, because her heart, she wanted to follow God, she got accepted to the family of God. And then both Moabites, they were pretty much evil, and Moabites and Ammonites were brothers. Like, so Moab and Ammon were brothers from the line of Lot, and, you know, his daughters, right? They got pregnant from Lot when they were badly affected by the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, this whole story going on here, and I encourage you guys to read more on your own. It's just a messy story here going here. And we move on to also another one is Bathsheba, adultery. And, you know, it's just a messy story with David getting Bathsheba and then getting her husband Uriah the Hittite killed in the battle. You know, it's just a bunch of people that Matthew is listing here is just associated with sins and broken people and failures and all that stuff. And, you know, the Bible does a really truthful thing here is that it doesn't really record only the people who actually were righteous, but the Bible also records people who actually failed, so that in return, we also associate with that because we're all human beings. So with that, I want to make two personal points. Jesus came to identify with you and I. And the second point is that good news from Jesus' family tree. And so my point is just to encourage you that no matter what your past, Jesus can save you. And any murderers reading these words, any prostitutes, any adulterers, any liars, any cheaters, any angry people, any thieves, and any hypocrites, well, I have good news for you. No matter what you have done in the past, Jesus can save you. And if a prostitute can be saved, then you can be saved. And if a murderer can be transformed by the power of the Holy Spirit, then you can be transformed. And if an adulterous person can be saved, then there is hope for you and I. And so no matter what your past looks like, no matter what your present feels like, no matter where you've been or what you have done in the past, God can give you a fresh start. And especially as we look forward to Christmas and into the new year, where people have all these things called New Year resolutions, you know, it's all good. But I want to encourage us to move away from the human New Year resolution to God's fresh transformation. So what does that mean to us? And how do we live that out? Well, we need to ask ourselves, in your circle of friends, who are the outsiders? Sometimes we do like to keep our own circle of friends. We're stuck in our own comfort zone, our own bubbles, because it's easier that way. But it's hard to get out of our comfort zone and to go out and reach out to the people who might be considered the marginalized, the outcast. Who are the outsiders at your workplace? Who has recently came into work and started working there, and they don't know what's going on, how to handle a machine, how to do these things, and that they get complaints, you know. And you are a person who has been working there for a long time, and so how do you want to create an atmosphere where they feel welcomed? And it's not always easy, but these are the basic questions that we need to ask ourselves. And who are the outsiders in your home, you know? And reality is that we don't have the perfect families. And your son-in-law, your daughter-in-law, who got married to you, one of your sons or your daughters, and you all combine together, and you need to somehow live in harmony with each other. And sometimes when you have the so-called the outsiders somehow joining your family, sometimes there's going to be conflict between maybe differences in opinions and ideologies and all that stuff. And so home sometimes cannot be a perfect place. So who are the outsiders in your home? That's a question we need to ask ourselves as well. And who are the outsiders in your school or class? Who's getting bullied? Who's getting picked on? Who is sitting on there by himself or herself in the corner of a cafeteria eating on her own by herself? And so those are the basic things that we need to kind of look around. And I don't have the best answer, but we have all our own different stories to tell. So God has invited us into his family as outsiders, as foreigners, as Gentiles. And so we can also do the same thing, to invite the outsiders into our own group of friends, our circle, in our comfort zone, to make them feel welcomed. Who are the outsiders in your church or in your community? And I'm glad, I'm thankful that Living Hope Church has been this way for a long time, a welcoming community, a welcoming church. And we see in the case of the Korean people as well, our brother Tesh already shared coming here as an immigrant, and Korean people as refugees. Pastor Frank shared last week that Andrew Ebert and Derek and Pastor Bob, Pastor Lauren, you know, I can go on and on listing a long list of names, but we felt really welcome when we first came here. And Living Hope Church has always been our home church, and I'm glad and I'm thankful for that. And so when Matthew portrays Jesus as the Messiah to his audience, the Jewish people, he wants them to know that in first verse of chapter Matthew chapter 1, he says, Jesus Christ, the son of David, right? It doesn't say the son of Abraham, although Abraham came first, but it says the son of David. And so in order for Jesus to be a Messiah, the long anticipated Messiah, the Emmanuel, he had to be a physical descendant of David, the throne, the royal throne. And so we can see here clearly that he is the promised Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And so for that, I encourage you guys to go out of your comfort zones in your own group of circle, in your friends, home, at school, or at work, and just be open, at least just be open. That's the first step that we can do. In this Christmas, it's going to be a really busy season. And as we look into the new year, new things, fresh start. And so how do we want to be obedient to the calling of God? And how do we want to follow the will of God and to make sure that the outsiders actually feel welcomed? And so we're going to transition into the benevolent offering. It's kind of an interesting transition here. So if we forgot to mention, and I'd like to invite the the worship team as well. Christina's and team, if you can come up. I'd also like to invite the ushers as we take the offering. And we usually do this every time we have a communion, second offering. And it's there's no play for obligation or anything. It's a freedom to give, just above and beyond your giving. And the things that the money that we collect goes towards the community, the needs of the families in our community here. And so I encourage you guys just to freely give and don't feel obligated.